So, welcome to November, in case you didn't notice, it's here. Although from the weather, you wouldn't really be able to tell that, I guess. So lecture 19, lecture notes page is 167. Just reminders about digital marketing and exploring Greece, I think. Test results, nothing new there in terms of new results, but mini test 9 is up and running. It closes Saturday on our usual schedule. Enhanced learning, extra credit, and pack back number 6 close tonight, and 7 will open tomorrow. So sometimes we don't get any marketing research extra credit where you earn 0.5 for participating like you did. Sometimes you get more than one. Of course, you do a couple of those. That's like 1%, 1.5% added to your course grade. Looks like we'll have another one coming up Monday. And so I'll obviously let you know if it comes through, but that'll be, if you do both, that's 1% added to your final course grade. That's not nothing. So that's coming up. We also know that midterm 2 is coming, 17% of your course grade. It's going to cover lectures 11 through 20, which would be next Monday. Apparently, I need to go back and take a course in how to read a calendar that seems to be very tricky for me. I keep getting dates a little wrong. But it opens Saturday, November 12th. I think I said Saturday, November 11th last time. Sorry. Saturday, November 12th at 8 a.m. Closes at 6 p.m. Note that it's 6 p.m. on Tuesday. And everything else about it is the same as we're used to. You know about my current thinking about academic integrity. So I've emphasized, if you weren't here last time, don't have any digital device anywhere near you during the test. That way there's no misunderstanding about what's going on in your life. If that doesn't work for you, contact me. We'll do a test in person. Don't be looking up and down and up and down, left and right, and over the top of the screen and sideways during the test. If you don't have lecture notes and book, you certainly should be looking at the screen. If you have a book, be using the book during the time you're looking away. If that doesn't work for you, that's fine. Contact me. We'll do it in person. Okay? So a little academic integrity in what we're doing. Thanksgiving is almost here. Therefore, it's really, from a retail viewpoint, Christmas. Merry Christmas, all. So here we go into the Christmassy time stuff, pre-Thanksgiving. How Macy's is planning for the holidays amid potential shopper pullback. I haven't messed a lot with you in the macro econ thing and what the Fed is doing, although we've sort of mentioned in passing. What the Fed do today? Did anybody follow that? Do you have any policy wonks, or what did they do today? Another 75 basis points up, meaning that your consumer credit, your mortgage, your credit card is going to go up. By golly, they're going to slow down consumer spending one way or another, but to cut back on inflation. Crypto is crashing, stock market is goofy, who knows what they're going to do next. Is it going to be 0.5? Is it going to work? Is it going to work? There's one analysis show that likes to say that the stock market is not the economy. Those are somewhat different things. But anyhow, 0.75. My point in this context is inflation is still there, and the Fed is going to get it down by causing all of your credit and interest rates to go up. Macy's is leaning into its identity as a destination with something for everyone, regardless of the size of their wallet this holiday season. Amid intensifying talks of a recession, one of the end results of getting inflation under control by increasing rates is a likely recession. And shopper pulling back because they don't have enough money. The story department store chain is highlighting what makes Macy's special for consumers. So we're seeing their retail strategy. We're thinking about their brand image. And my comment, Thanksgiving is almost here, I can't spell and I can't use a calendar either, is almost here, so it's Christmas. The overall holiday campaign, Give Love, Give Style, includes a series of videos that will run on TV, online video, and on social. In one spot, a woman has a strange but eventually happy reaction to a jewelry gift from her husband. I assume this is supposed to resonate, be a little emotional, get attention, as folks figure out what's going on.
I think that's it.
I don't think it is. Do you like it? Does she like it? Use your words, Mom.
I have a receipt, so there's no need to get mad. She likes it.
Give love, give style for the holiday season. In another spot showcases Macy's new Toys R Us in shops. How many guys, was Jeffrey and Toys R Us still a thing when you were young? Was that Toys R Us a place you would go to? Then, of course, they folded. They bankrupt. And now they're back. And in this case, they're back, among other places, inside of Macy's with Shop in Shops, which has now been rolled out to all Macy's stores in time for the holiday season. So we're talking about our target audiences. We're talking about brand relationships. We're closely monitoring the macroeconomic impacts on consumer behavior. Literally what we say marketers have to do in this class when we talked about those external forces, those crust factors, right? And what that means for our business. Rich Lennox added that the chain offers a wide range of gifts for all price points. Macy's also has a guide finder guide in stores and online that lets shoppers search by price, for example. So we're seeing crest factor research, macroeconomics, part of the E in our crest acronym, and price in the mix, trying to find a mix that will work for all of our potential consumer segments. As long as we're on the topic, let's think what Kohl's is doing. Under a new chief marketing officer, Kohl's ditches the emotional holiday ad that it's been using for the last couple years in favor of a more promotional campaign. After 2 years of emotional holiday ad campaigns, Kohl's is meeting its customers where they need it to be, with promotions and value. A 30-second holiday anthem spot released today called More Gifts, More Savings gives Kohl's Cash, the retailer's coupon program, a starring role along with apparel, toys, and home products. So here's their promotional strategy, not emotional, but cash savings. So with Kohl's Cash, you can get more of everything for your holiday season. We know customers are feeling the pressure of inflation, and knowing that they're spending more on essentials, discretionary is where they're starting to make trade-offs, says Christy Raymond. Middle-income consumers are the most impacted, and as we continue to talk to consumers, as we look to holiday, we know value will be more important. So we're trying to understand consumer behavior, what they need today in the face of inflation and looming perhaps recession. Kohl's shows a jazzy mix of people and products with a soundtrack set to December, Earth, Wind, and Fire's holiday version of the classic song September. The spot ends with a text that reads, "Give more, get more." Note that Macy's tagline was, "Give love, give style," in its new holiday campaign. So we're seeing a little bit of retail store competition and sort of similar sayings. Along with two versions of that anthem spot, Kohl's will run a series of product-specific spots, as well as commercial highlighting Sephora, which now has shops in shops with hundreds of Kohl's locations, and with a goal of more than 1,100 stores over time. So a different version of brand partnerships, not Toys R Us, but Sephora. We wanted the spot to feel more modern and contemporary and showcase more product. So there's our campaign goal. The marketing campaign will include linear and connected TV, direct mail and print, and a hefty social media presence. Kohl's is leaning more into TikTok, noting that Kohl's Cash stands out on social. Customers can highlight Kohl's Cash in their TikTok videos, and the retailer will also be running an interactive TikTok offering that allows consumers to shake their phones to reveal surprise deals. In addition, Kohl's is using a gamified AR lens on Instagram and Facebook, and an outfit color match experience on Pinterest. So clearly the importance of social media to marketing and getting consumers involved with the brand. Finally, we've talked about Legos on and off here a couple times. Legos is out there doing stuff. Kids take charge of Legos holiday ad featuring Katy Perry. Lego has given a group of children some creative control of its holiday campaign, leading to the development of an unusual gift-sharing vehicle that would eventually transport pop superstar Katy Perry on top of it. So we're getting consumers involved, and we are getting celebrities involved in marketing. Let's see their little ad. Supposedly, this ad is real life, and the kids don't know the vehicle that they are building with Legos is coming. At least that's what I think I heard about it.
It's the wheel. Oh,
here's one.
We can put the drop in.
Playful Holiday, Rebuild the World with Katy Perry. The narrative of this latest part of the Build to Give campaign highlights the message that play is the best way to bring people together. To do this, a 90-year-old toy brand had kids construct a unique vehicle built out of Lego bricks, a space shuttle, and a giraffe to be featured in the 60-second hero film. The company then surprised them by bringing their creation to life for the ad, building a functional vehicle that doubles as a stage for Katy Perry to perform her hit track, Firework. The main spot is supported by two other films, which also feature children being creative while using Lego bricks to build and play together. So there, promotional campaign, getting consumer involvement, using celebrities for the holiday season. All right, so we're going to pick up with Lecture Notes, page 167, page 307 in the textbook, where we left off last time. Maybe. I didn't back check to see where we did leave off. Hold on. Where did we leave off? Somewhere up here. I forgot to look back. That looks right. So since I forgot to check, I know we did this, I know we talked about this, I know we talked about that. And that looks like the end part of what we talked about. Suing was the last thing we talked about, I think. Yeah? All right. So if you're going to avoid counterfeiting and know when to sue, you better have somebody watching out for these counterfeiters. So this is the idea of online monitoring. The internet has caused opportunities for parties to easily sell counterfeit goods, your brand name, but not your product. So what are we going to do? Well, we have to find some way of monitoring things. This is one company that would help you to do that. CSC, founded in 1997, Name Protect assists its customers, which include leading law firms, Fortune 500 companies, and other businesses worldwide, in meeting the evolving challenges of protecting brand name assets in today's global economy. They were acquired by CSC in 2007. But there's one way to think about how you're going to watch for stuff that's on the internet. How would you know something isn't yours? Well, like we talked about last time, the prices being offered are well below what your brand can offer them for. That's a hint there's something wrong. By the way, as a consumer, you know, if it's too good to be true, it's probably not true, just saying. Lack of good contact information on that website. Usually, brands let you know where to find them, how to contact them. Missing service and warranty information. Inaccurate product descriptions. Products sold on sites not registered to the seller. Sites with unsecured transactions, they don't go to HTTPS. I was foolish enough, this is probably a couple years ago, to buy something off of Facebook social media click, and this thing comes, it's got no product information, no information on what it's made out, nobody to contact, nothing. I threw that thing away. It's like, I don't know what I bought, but it's not something I want. So what are some branding strategies we can use? Well, if we're a producer, a manufacturer, one thing I can do is produce it, manufacture it, and sell it under my own name. It's used by very large firms who are well-financed, well-managed. We've talked already how expensive it is to develop a new product, get it out there, market it. So if you're going to make it in your own name, you got to have some resources. Obviously, companies like Apple, bless you, Apple and Amazon, big companies, they manufacture things in their own name, yeah? We also find some folks that are making component parts, accessory parts, pieces and parts that are added into, fabricating parts, that are added into the final product without any further processing, and they may choose to brand as well. We all know Dolby, right? And we get products with Dolby in them. And so Dolby is an additional add-on piece. You don't buy, I don't think you buy Dolby headphones. I don't think they got into that market. But you buy headphones with Dolby in them. So they want to have their brand name on that, make it a selling feature for consumers. So here the seller wants to develop a market preference for its branded parts or materials. We saw that with the Intel chip a while ago. It's a good strategy when the product is also a consumer good that's bought for replacement purposes, and people want that brand name in whatever they're buying. The Delco idea, if you're buying a replacement cable, it's the Lightning cable for Apple. So that makes sense there. Also, it makes sense when the item is a key part of the finished product. If it's some minor piece, nobody cares that you're branded. So it has to be something important to the final product. If you are a middleman, a wholesaler, a retailer, what's your view of branding? Well, what you might do is get a manufacturer who's making stuff anyhow to make it in your name. So they're making it, but they're putting your name on it. So private labeling is what this is called. It involves selling products which a business makes under another company's brand. So you're the manufacturer, you're making it for Kroger's. Or whatever. It's a widespread strategy among manufacturers for the business that's carrying the product, the middlemen. Private labeling allows them to sell products they have no way of manufacturing themselves using their unique brand. So I use the Kroger's example. I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think Kroger's is doing the manufacturing of cans of corn called Kroger. It's some big conglomerate manufacturer. They probably make other brands of corn, but they also have some that they make for Kroger, yeah? The hope is that the manufacturer brands, the big national brands, let's pretend Green Giant corn, will appeal to loyal customers, while the cost-conscious consumers might buy the less expensive middleman private label brands. I think in our toothpaste example, you have Crest out on the shelf. And then you also see Rite Aid toothpaste on the shelf. I don't think Rite Aid has a manufacturing plant. They have somebody making it for them. The hope is that you would buy Crest because it's the more expensive one if you are a Crest manufacturer. But hey, maybe you like the cheaper one today. Vega Coffee sells its product to ice cream manufacturers who use it in their products as sort of a premium coffee product. And they also, of course, make their own coffee as well. The middleman may choose to carry only the manufacturer's brand. So I'm a wholesaler or reseller, and I'm not going to mess with this. I'm going to carry Heinz, Procter & Gamble, Smucker's. I'm going to carry the big brands. Why? Because they don't want to worry about their name on the product. You got to promote it. You got to ensure the quality is there. You got to watch the inventory. You got to manage the brand. Forget about it. Let these other big companies do that. Or the middleman may choose to carry both the producer, the big manufacturer, right, brand, and their own private labels because it makes sense for their customers. Kroger's, my example earlier, carries national brands plus its own brands. They use a tiered private label marketing strategy. So, yeah, they're carrying Smucker's, and they're carrying Heinz, and they're carrying Jolly Green Giant, but they have their own brands, and the Kroger private brand emphasizes no-frills product at the lowest possible price. Their Simple Truth brand is focused on the organic market, and their private selection is, for a private label, their premium brand. So they recognize it's worthwhile carrying both their own label and the national brand. So, What's the hope here? The hope is that we can create store loyalty. Whatever it is you want, we got it. You want the national brand? We got it. You want our premium brand? We got it. You want the low price, no frills brand? We got it. Come to our store. 60% of retailers say they plan to place more emphasis on their own private label branding. Get manufacturers to make things in their name. Now, if you're a manufacturer and all of a sudden wholesalers and resellers are carrying their own brand, what's that mean for your brand? What are you going to do? Well, one thing you could do is cut your price so that you're more comparable to those private label brands. Or, your preferred way, I would say, convince consumers of your brand superiority. Sort of the strategy we saw P&G do, I think we were talking last time. Emphasize how good your product is, or how if using it over the long run you can save money, or it's cleaner, or it's sweeter, or it's tastier, whatever it might be. You can prune back your product lines so that you don't carry as much dead weight inventory in the face of this competition. But it does set up what we call the battle of the brands. That is to say, the battle of the national producer brand against that store brand. And how is that going to work out on the store shelf? How is it going to work out with the consumer? Whether you're a producer or a wholesaler, retailer, or middleman, you have to think about how you're going to brand within your product mix, all the different things you have out there. And one approach you might decide to use is to have a separate name for each product. Comet and Old Spice are both made by the same manufacturer. Do you know who they're made by any chance? Who would you guess they're made by? P&G, my man, thank you. And P&G does not choose to make a big deal out of it being Procter & Gamble Old Spice, Procter & Gamble Comet, okay? So what they're doing is they're choosing to use a separate name for each product. Or you might choose to use a family branding approach. So have you ever seen, have you ever used Armor All products? So you've got Armor All glass cleaner, Armor All tire cleaner, Armor All interior cleaner, Armor All polish, Armor All wax. Armor All is on the name of all of their products. They take a different approach. Firestone tires, regardless of which model you're getting of them, say Firestone on them. If you're trying to brand for market saturation, to get your product well known across the entire array of possible consumers, you might have multiple brands out there. Once again, our friends over at P&G pretty well saturate the market for laundry detergent. You want Soft and Baby, we got Dreft. You want Powerful, we got Bold. You want Cold Water, we got Era. You want, well, Ariel, I think, is Hispanic. So, Gain, Ariel, Fairy, Tide, Era, Bold, Cheer, Dazz, Dreft. If you want laundry detergent, we got you. Saturate the market. Kellogg's pretty much has most any cereal you want to have, right? If you want cereal, we got cereal. We got more cereal. We got more cereal. Oftentimes, people coming from other countries to one of our grocery stores are just astonished, gobsmacked, awed, can't believe what they're seeing because of things like this. More. So they pretty well have the whole thing covered. In some cases, what you want to do is partner up with somebody. You feel there'll be some advantage in the marketplace. Consumers like both your brands. What if we could partner up? So this is co-branding or dual branding, where we put two or more brand names on the same product. So we know Betty Crocker, right, is a cake mix. We've heard of that product, Betty Crocker. And we certainly know Hershey's, two good brands. Let's combine those puppies together into Hershey's Super Moist Betty Crocker Chocolate Cake Mix. Wow, is another approach. Now, it's great, except you can do it too much. If your name's on everything, then what are you at some point in time? What happens if that product fails for some reason, some manufacturing issue? Both brands suffer, right? So if there was some defect in the cake mix, both of those brand names are going to be seen as at fault, so that could be an issue. When done right, though, you build up brand equity. Brand equity is the value that the brand name adds to the product over what it would be without the brand name. How many of you guys still buy bottled water? Bottled water? Yeah. What do you buy? Aquafina? Great value. You're going the other, yep, great value. So I don't know what you pay for a bottle, great value. Do you? Or does it always come in a multi-pack? The big, so how much is it a piece? I bet it's a lot less, though, than, there's your great value. Great value in that pack is about 14 cents a bottle. Can you buy Dasani at 14 cents a bottle? Aquafina at 14 cents a bottle? Why not? Because people are willing to pay more money for the brand name because of the value, the status, whatever you want to say it is, over great value, right? So that difference in the value between the generic version of the thing and the branded version of the thing is what's called brand equity. So the brand equity of Coke, last time I checked, about $88 billion worth of brand equity. What the value is of the company over what it would be if it was just cola. So brand equity gives a company, which by the way, it costs money to build brand equity, a reason to buy that product. Okay, we talked before about the store brand of aspirin and Bayer aspirin, right? Some of us would just go for the store brand. Others of us want, it's my health, it's worth it, I want Bayer aspirin. Gives me a reason to buy. It's a barrier to competition. If you're really strong in the marketplace, how are you going to go up against Procter & Gamble and whatever they're selling? It helps international expansion because people know who you are. When Coca-Cola or Starbucks or McDonald's or KFC go to grow, they don't have to introduce to the country what they are. They're pretty well known because of the brand equity that they have. And it helps a product to survive a crisis. One of the worst case examples of a brand succeeding in a crisis is the ancient story about a nut job that was putting poison cyanide pills inside bottles of Tylenol up somewhere in Washington State. Anybody remember that very old story? And so Tylenol could have done a variety of things. They could have said, you know, it's just Washington. Don't worry about it. They shut down everything. They pulled all bottles of Tylenol off every shelf in the country. They were critical in creating what is now common, the safety cap with the aluminum foil over the thing so you could tell if it was broken open or if it had been busted open, which, by the way, I don't even know if you think about it anymore. Had they not done all that stuff and had really strong image equity to begin with, I don't think they'd still be around. You were poisoning people in Washington State, not that the company was. But they were able to survive. They acted quick. They had good equity. It allows them to survive in a crisis like that. Now, it has its limits. Campbell's, pretty good brand. We know the brand name, yeah? So they're thinking about expanding into another category that has a tomato base, spaghetti. And they did expand into spaghetti sauce. And they expanded into spaghetti sauce. But they said, you know, when people think Campbell's, they're not thinking Italian spaghetti sauce. That's not what comes to mind. So when they expanded, they said, you know, our brand equity isn't going to extend over to a new spaghetti sauce. We're going to come up with an entirely new appropriate name. Prego is the way they went. So they felt there were limits to their brand equity. We can license our brand where we give permission to another firm to use the brand name and the brand mark on its products. Let me see who I can pick on here for a minute. What do you got? Cleveland? Is that the Guardians? Or Cleveland Guardians. So I decided to come up with a new sweatshirt. I'm going to sell it to you. You know what you paid for that? $30. I'm going to sell you a $30 sweatshirt, and it's going to say Marks on it. Probably not going to buy it, right? I manufacture the sweatshirt. I get permission. I put Cleveland Guardians on it. Whoa, I want that. I'm willing to pay $30 for that. How much money would it cost me to get create a sweatshirt with marks that you'd be willing to pay $30 for? A lot of money. So rather than try to do that, I just make an arrangement and I manufacture the product. Polo, Ralph Lauren Polo Man, he does a lot of these deals. He's on bed sheets, he's on towels, he's on socks, he's on a lot of different products. The brand owner gets the profits. So Cleveland Guardians gets money from that licensing deal with that sweatshirt company. And of course, brand recognition, the name is out there more than it otherwise is. And the other firm, the sweatshirt manufacturer, the bedsheet manufacturer, gets greater probability of success. I'm going to get more success selling Cleveland Guardians sweatshirts than I am Mark's sweatshirts. And reduce marketing costs because people already know and want the product. So if that's your model, that makes sense for you, you get permission and get trademark or brand licensing onto the thing you're making. Let's see. Polo Ralph Lauren enters into a global licensing agreement with Apparel Ventures to manufacture and distribute women's and girls' swimwear. So I guess that was a recent update. Here's a licensed KSU product for that backpack manufacturer. And here is a licensed product on a t-shirt from... Anybody know that sound? Okay, so it appeals to a certain segment of the population. Selling that t-shirt with the logo versus not. All right, so we next come up with a fairly in-depth, longest discussion from a show that came in with called Entrepreneurs. And we're going to walk you through what these guys did to be successful in their particular category, including something we haven't talked much about, the importance of packaging, getting people's attention, making sure it carries the right image, packaging to the product and its success. But they also are going to go through a whole set of things, including business planning steps, things we've talked about. So let's take a look at this.
Two male models, Jason Osborne and Jason Wright, hope to leave the glamour of fashion.
It was fun, but it was something that I was ready to get out of.
To make their own granola. Will they become the new rock stars of the business world?
Well, we were just two guys in an apartment. My theory was, if the next guy can do it, I can do it, and I can do it better.
That I moved in, this guy was making this awesome granola that I could not get enough of. I was like, Jay, man, we got to take this to market. You got to sell this. We got to get it out there, you know. That's how the whole thing started.
It's just a compelling story. You got two former male models essentially sitting around the kitchen table, and it's the classic Eureka moment. They say, hey, we've got this granola. Why don't we try selling it? And they saw that it was popular among their friends. They found out it was a healthy product. It just started to take off.
It doesn't take long before both Jasons realize they have a potential product and partnership in the making. But Wright and Osborne aren't able to stop modeling yet because they use that money to fund making their granola. They aren't turning a profit, but they know they're onto something, which needs a name.
We had probably, I would say, 20, 25 different names that we could call it. But we also picked Feed, and we thought Feed described exactly what was in the bag.
Feed is a great name. I think simplicity is really important, especially on grocery shelves. We've got thousands of products to choose from.
Our belief is that what you put into your body determines your performance. You want to put the best ingredients possible. And so that concept of feeding really came through.
The beginnings of a new brand are born. Feed Granola gets rave reviews from family and friends from all over the city, especially at the Wilhelmina Modeling Agency.
It was better than anything that I had tasted, and I think the reaction in the agency was pretty much the same. Everybody said, wow, this is terrific stuff. I think they had started to formulate this idea based on the feedback that they had, that maybe this might be a good idea for a business.
Wright and Osborne are two models who begin making Feed Granola in their West Village walk-up. Their grassroots style of marketing is paving the way to their success. Growing their business involves several steps: writing a business plan, getting a loan, and incorporating. But the missing link in their chain of success is more sophisticated packaging. Wright and Osborne are on the cusp of launching Feed nationally. They were using coffee bags and labels from Staples, and now it's time to give their brand a stronger identity.
Customer today, you probably got not even a second to get their attention. And so you want them, you want your brand big, and you want it something that they remember. And if not, you'll just get lost in the market.
Wright and Osborne's goal is to simplify their packaging and incorporate some of their own personalities. To do that, they consult a branding and identity expert.
Both Jasons had this great idea for a product, and they were having trouble developing the brand and just actually bringing it to market. This is what Jason Osborne presented to me. And you look at this and you want to find out what's working with this and what's not working with it. One of the problems that we had was that it's hard to read. It's a little busy. As an image, you're not quite sure what that is. Like, you know, it could be a bag of corn, bag of potatoes. We're not quite sure. I mean, it's legible, which is good, but you kind of want to up the professionalism of this a little bit. So we go from here to here. First, simple packaging. We keep true to the brown, like, which is also reminiscent of the burlap sack, which is great. We stylize the word feed, added some color to it.
We were trying to mimic a feed bag, you know, a sack of grains, something that was recognizable by everyone. It was grains, it was hearty, it was organic. We knew it was for thoroughbreds. That's kind of what the concept of this package evolved from.
It very simply gets across the message of what they want to do. And it's good packaging, showcases the product really well, and has a lot of character to it.
But Osborne and Wright leave their fears behind when they're nominated for an award for Feed's packaging.
I got a call from both Jasons, and they were like, hey, we're a finalist for the best packaging. And it was really great because the packaging was it's almost like this breath of fresh air to a lot of the packaging that was going on at that time.
It gives them the exposure they hope for. A feeding frenzy ensues as foodies from all over the industry come over to get the scoop on Feed.
Whole Foods comes up to us, and they like the product. And
in the end, they become interested and pick it up. So here we have a couple of guys. They're doing some informal new product development. They're doing some informal research. People seem to like it. It grows a little bit. Now they have to get more formal, including coming through this idea of the packaging, which makes a success in the marketplace where, again, there's too many. I mean, when you see that kumquat flavored ding dong, that's going to grab your attention. When you see that bag of feed, if you're in the market for granola, it might grab your attention in the marketplace. So that helped them get attention from Whole Foods and to become a bit of successful. So there's a little bit about their story. So we focus so far on physical goods, on products. Managing brands is a little different. It has some special elements to it that makes it a little tricky. So we moved to chapter 12. We've developed our new product in band. We went through that process. In an earlier chapter, we thought about managing products. Now we're going to think about managing services. Lecture notes, page 174, I think. So let's think of some services marketing. How many of you guys have been to Topgolf? Yeah? What a cool experience. There's some physical product there, but you're not going there to buy golf clubs. You're going there for the experience of this service provider. So Topgolf expands offerings with a 10-hole golf course and new locations. In April 2022, the brand opened up a 10-hole golf course with certain unique touches, unique service features. The 10th hole allows players to track their first drive using Top Tracer technology, which charts the ball's speed and trajectory. Electric bikes can be used on the course instead of golf carts. Technology and marketing and enhancing the consumer experience. With 8 more locations slated to open in 2022 between the U.S. and the U.K., plus another in Bangkok, Thailand, the company is set to hit 86 locations in 6 countries by the end of the year. So global services marketing. And what's the value here? It's not the physical product. It's the service. You're getting a fun experience. Yeah? Services marketing. Hippo Insurance, another service. When you buy insurance, you're not getting a physical product other than maybe the document. Says clients can stand up to problems. Hippo Insurance, which competes with Geico, Progressive, and Allstate, among others, is rolling out a new ad featuring a homeowner staring down a really difficult event. catastrophic is what I'm trying to say here. Sound, anyone? Yes. To the next problem that shows up with Hippo. So, campaign focuses on helping consumers to stand up to the next problem that shows up. So, getting consumers' attention, a bit of humor in advertising. Hippo is trying to pry business from established competitors. The company hopes to win clients by covering factors that other insurance may fail to cover, like upkeep, security, repairs. For example, Hippo provides a sensor that chirps when water leaks under a kitchen sink, so a plumber can be called in to prevent serious damage. So we're seeing marketplace competition, a unique selling proposition for a service. Again, what's the value? Peace of mind. So, services marketing, a little bit different than marketing products. We talk about the service marketing triangle, starting with company management, who has to understand what the consumers want and value in a service, right? Do they want peace of mind? So this is the service promise that we're going to develop and deliver. Then we're going to communicate that service promise through external marketing promotions, communications. But unlike most products, most services, not all, are delivered by people. Managing people, I'll tell you. Managing people is a trick. And so you've got to think as a company management, how are you going to be sure that they get what it is you're doing? So we use internal marketing to be sure our employees enable that service promise. And when you don't get the service you expect from the establishment, you're pretty unhappy. Then the employees to the customers, we have to be sure our employees deliver that service promise through their service encounters. That triangle is pretty important to be successful in most services situations. And we do that through interactive marketing. So, why talk about services in particular? Well, services are a huge part of the U.S. economy, both in dollars and in jobs. Last time I got data in 2019, the gross domestic product was $21.4 trillion, and services were $16.5 trillion. About 77% of gross domestic product is not from manufacturing products. It's from services. Around 131 million people work in services. It's almost 80% of all those people employed. So it seems like we should pay a little attention to managing services, yeah? Service sector value added to the gross domestic product by industry. We see at the top we have finance, insurance, real estate, rental and leasing, professional and business services, government, manufacturing, why that's services, I have to backtrack on, educational services, etc. And so financial, insurance, real estate, and rental, really big contributors to the market. Services are a larger part of the U.S. gross product than physical goods. We just made that point. We can see it in this little chart. So what are services? What are we talking about here? Services are the intangible activities and benefits that we provide to consumers in terms, in exchange for money or something else of value. Intangible. So here, and I think we talked about intangibility before, we'll just backtrack over it. What are we talking about when we talk about something that's intangible? Yeah. Say again? a haircut, right? So you aren't walking away with a product, you're walking away with less hair. So what, that's a service you might get. And we'll move over to a little bit. If I ask you to go get a shovel for me, you can get a shovel. You're going out later today, you get a haircut. Would you get one for me? No, can do. It's a different sort of beast, right? Doesn't make any sense. So as we think about this increased importance of influence, we recognize that organizations focus on productivity and profits drives their interest in services. For example, customer service is one of the most vital yet overlooked paths to profitability. Your net profit will show the positive results of your customer service efforts, says research. It's very hard to decrease costs, obviously, especially today, but you can offer better customer service to your segments, to your target audience, and that allows you to increase sales. Surveys show that for many customers, service is more important than price. Anybody feel that way in your life? For you, you'd rather pay a little more to get good customer service? Couple people. That's, I think, my whole wife thing, why I can't really get her excited about Kohl's, because they don't provide the same customer service as Saks Fifth Avenue, as Nordstrom's. But you're saving money, but I don't get the same customer service. Also, on the consumer side, consumers feel more and more in their life, they're busier and busier. They have less and less time. And so this is manifest in things like, I don't have enough time to go shopping for my own clothes. I want somebody to do it for me. Personal shoppers, Stitch Fix, who knows this product category? A couple people. So, discovering styles you love just got easier. Take your style quiz. Tell us about your style. Get pieces picked just for you. Shop on your own in your personalized store. Tell us what you like and we'll find what you love. Let us find your favorites from thousands of brands and styles, and we'll ship it out to you. And if you don't like it, you can return it. No commitment. Shop when you want, how you want. You don't have to subscribe. Are you ready? Get involved, and they're going to send you products based on your taste. You don't have to waste all that time going shopping. Wow. Take out food, home delivery, Uber Eats. Is it cheaper to buy at a grocery store and make food at home, or is it cheaper to go out and eat? Which is cheaper? Well, let me get somebody. Anybody else? Yeah. Make it at home, right? Cheaper, and I don't have a lot of money. I'm a college student. How many of you guys have gone out to eat in the last month? Wait a minute. You don't have enough money to do anything. What do you mean you're going out to eat? Well, I'm too busy. I don't have time to go shopping and make my own stuff. So take out food, home delivery. Panera was going to hire 10,000 people as it expanded home delivery. We got Grubhub, DoorDash, Uber Eats, etc. Services people are willing to pay for. House and lawn care. How many people grew up behind their daddy's push mower? Anybody other than me? Okay, oh, that's a funny thing for you. So I grew up, my daddy didn't even have an electric mower, man. I'm pushing that mower. So it was in my nature. When I got the first house as an adult, I got myself a walk-behind mower. It wasn't push, it was gasoline power. Fine. I moved from one home to another home with much bigger property. I forgot to cut the lawn one weekend, and it was wet the next weekend, and it was tall. I spent 8 hours cutting the lawn. I threw the lawnmower away and hired a kid in the neighborhood to start cutting the lawn. He is now driving a Cadillac Espeladon and has a full business, and I don't have to cut my lawn. It's not worth the time to me. I'd rather pay money for that. The service is worth it to me. So poverty of time, another driver here. It affects virtually all industries in terms of, like, location. People don't want to bother going into a bank and actually waiting to talk to some person, somebody. They want an ATM. People want branch outlets. They don't have to go to wherever the main store is. They want just-in-time delivery. They want longer business hours. For many, many years, if you wanted to buy a car, you had to do it between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m., Monday through Friday. I said one time to a car dealer a long time ago, I said, you know, this is the most, other than my house, it's the most expensive thing I'm going to buy. My wife and I both work. We've got kids. We'd like to meet with you together on the weekend when we have time. Why aren't you open on the weekend? At the time, the guy said, well, my employees have family, you know, the industry, but my employees have families too. They deserve the weekend off. I can't buy from you. How about if you're open when I need you to be there? Longer business hours, better trained sales and service people are wanted. One-stop shopping. I don't want to have to go from store to store. Improved customer service systems. I want to be able to contact you in person, on the phone, online, and get a response. More information available. I want it before the sale. I want it during the sale. I want it after the sale. And all of these services add value for consumers beyond the issues of price and product quality. And not having it loses you customers. My brother was using one of the things where you order dinner, it comes in a box, gives you all the ingredients, and then you make it up yourself. Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, what's one of the brands? I don't know. Which one? HelloFresh. I think it might have been HelloFresh, let's say. Loved it. He loved it in general. He and his wife loved it. But suddenly, the website wasn't working right. And he'd order stuff, and then he'd try to back out, and the wrong stuff kept coming. So he calls him up, and if I'm telling the story this way, he calls him up more than once, and customer service can't figure it out, and they're apologizing, and they're dumping it, and they're still making him pay. He does that three or four different times, and finally he says, I like the product, but not the way it's working. I quit. The service is not working. It's not doing what I need it to do. I'm done. He's now moving to Blue Apron or something. But they lost the customer because they're not doing the basics. A, getting the service there properly, and B, giving him customer service to solve his problems. Bad idea. Compared to products, then, services have four unique characteristics. Sometimes I joke, marketers can't count higher than four, right? We've got the four P's of marketing, product, place, price, promotion. And here we have the four unique elements of services, intangibility, inseparability, inconsistency, and the perishability of inventory. So let's think a little bit about these. Intangibility. Obviously, for many types of services, you can't see them, touch them, taste them, feel them. Insurance. What is there to see, touch, taste, or feel? The policy? Tasty. There's nothing there. So, because there's nothing there, it's harder to communicate to the consumer your service features, your quality. How do you make the point? We have to find some way of using our external communications, our promotion, to make these things more tangible to the consumer. And setting the price can also be hard because consumers can't really see a physical product. So we're thinking here on the right-hand side, company management, thinking about the service promise, understanding what consumers need, wants, and values are, and then finding ways to communicate that promise to the customer. Take insurance, for example. It's a non-tangible thing, but we find a variety of ways to make them more tangible. When you think Allstate, do you think their tagline? Do you know what their tagline is? Nobody? You're in good hands with Allstate. What are we trying to get you to picture? There's nothing physical there, but we have your family. We got you. I like this set of commercials if they're working for me.
I'm your cat. And ever since you brought me home that day, well, I've been plotting to destroy you, sizing you up, calculating your every move. You think this is love?
This is a billion years of tiger DNA just ready to pounce.
And if you got the wrong home insurance coverage, you could be coughing up the cash for this. So get Allstate and be better protected from mayhem, like Meow.
My man Mayhem, what are we trying to do with that set of commercials? Make it more tangible. What's it mean to have something destroyed and not have insurance coverage for it, yeah? Prudential was the idea of the Rock of Gibraltar, travelers under the insurance of their umbrella. State Farm, I forget what they were using, why I used that example. Oh, I'm sorry? Like a good neighbor. Yep. All right. Thank you. So trying to make it more tangible with this tagline. Inconsistency is another issue with services. You can, have we had operations management yet? Anybody, or is that later in our curriculum? There, they talk about quality control and quality standards and maybe ISO, whatever. You can standardize your product coming off of a production line, right? You can see if it's in standard, right? You can stop the line and correct the press or whatever you're using to make it right. How do you do that with a service? Who's ever gone to a place where they get their hair styled or cut, man or woman, and it's really great one time, and you go the next time, and it's meh? How's that happen? It's a service done by people. It's hard to standardize, right? So you get inconsistent delivery and quality depending on the person performing the service. And the same person has good days and bad days. How many of you guys have ever had a good college professor? How many of you guys have ever had a bad college professor? Why are you looking at me? How many of you have had a college professor who's good on some days and bad on other days, right? How do you standardize the delivery of a class, of an education? It's a service product, hard to standardize. We do try to minimize this by employee selection. The person cutting your hair hopefully was selected for their skill and ability, and then training them. If you go to that high style place, Famous Hair, or whatever they are called now, they say, look, everybody's trained to the same standard. We all cut the hair the same way. Whether or not it's true, we train people to deliver our service. And then we set performance standards. We let people know this is what you need to do in providing that service. So up in our triangle, we're trying to make the point, services are delivered often by people, and we use internal marketing to be sure our employees enable that service priority. Internal marketing of our standards and expectations to our internal customers, our employees, is key in getting them to understand how to treat our employees right. Good pay, good working conditions, appropriate motivation and incentives create satisfied employees, and it's those satisfied employees who are likely to deliver the service promise in a more consistent way. So one way of managing our service is to make sure we're treating our employees right. One company that does that pretty well is Marriott. Marriott International operates over 6,500 properties in 127 countries and territories with over 20 brands globally. How in the world do you manage consistent delivery of hotel services through all of these different types of brands? Well, you sure better make sure that your employees know what it is you expect. So internal marketing helps a service firm to enable the service promise, and we're talking and targeting to employees. So J.W. Bill Merritt said, if you take care of your employees, they will take care of your customers, and your business will take care of itself because they know what they need to deliver. So at Marriott, a core value is that if they take care of the associates, employees, the associates would take care of the guests, and the guests will come back again because they're having a great experience. Marriott employees are offered discounts, talent development, international exposure, an open-door policy, cross-development, cross-department opportunities, performance incentives, and rewards for high performance. As a result, they're pretty successful, but they're also consistently listed on the best companies to work for. They have the idea of what it takes to provide a good service. Inseparability is another thing that makes it different than a product in most cases. Inseparability means that there is simultaneous production and consumption. Back to my idea of a shovel. Do I have to use a shovel as soon as it's made, be there when it comes off the line, and that's when I'm going to use it? Duh, of course not. They make the shovel. They put it somewhere, they inventory it, they warehouse it, it waits for me, it's at the retail store. You go into the hardware store later this week? Yeah. Could you get me a shovel? Yeah, not a problem. I don't have to be there to get the shovel. Haircut, not so easy. You're getting a haircut, you can't get it from me. I have to be there at the time. So consumers are a part of the process of getting the service. And in some cases, you have to spend a little bit of time managing that interaction so the customer understands what's going on. You often will talk to doctors providing a medical service, And they will tell you over and over again, they can't do it without you. You've got to exercise more. You've got to get off the couch. You've got to eat better. You've got to cut down on drinking. You're part of the process. Sometimes you need educated about that. So we have to educate consumers about the service process and their role in it. Less important for a shovel, more important in other service delivery. So here, external marketing is the key. We have to educate consumers about our service features, communicate any prereqs that are necessary for this to be a successful service interaction, and then help consumers to develop the right mindset and expectations for how this service interaction will occur. Otherwise, they don't know what to expect. They aren't satisfied. Marriott uses external advertising to educate their guests, set their expectations about what its hotels' various offerings are, what to expect. They do that in print. Most hotels train their people with booklets. We take ours to the ballet. So we're doing good service with our physical movements. They also make the point on social media. Capitalize on your trip to D.C. Jay Marriott Edmond will help you make the most of your trip to the nation's capital if you're getting dinner downtown and want to try a new restaurant. He recommends the Tadish Grill for a spectacular meal, so we see it out there on Twitter. Marriott uses interactive marketing to educate its associates on how to interact with the guests. From the concierge at the front desk to housekeeping and maintenance, the focus is on improving the customer's experience, and the end result is very high quality service delivery and customer experience because they're setting those expectations for the employees too. Perishability. If I don't buy that shovel today, is it still there tomorrow? Yeah. If I don't get that haircut today, is that haircut available tomorrow? No, that's a lost seat. Nothing happened. It's gone. So services can't, in general, be inventoried. This means it's hard to balance capacity, supply, and demand for the service. It's pretty hard to return the service for credit or exchange. I didn't like that haircut. Can you give me a different haircut? You need to find ways to manage the demand in peak periods, and then what are you going to do when you have supply available, but there's no demand for it? How are you going to use capacity in off-peak periods? So this idea of idle production capacity in services occurs when the service provider is available, but there is no demand. If you're working a stylist chair and nobody comes in today, how much money are you making? Nothing. What do you do? If you're a real estate agent, nobody's buying houses today. So, revenue management helps us to think about what we're going to do to increase demand when there is none. Marriott introduced revenue management to the lodging industry with the innovation One Yield Revenue Management System and related processes that resulted in a 20% lift in revenue from this passing transient business. Marriott's revenue management system and processes incorporates all aspects of the hotel inventory, including rooms, meeting space, catering opportunities. The One Yield software takes most of the guesswork out of setting room rates by providing recommendations to employees about what rates to offer at any given property on any given day, given the history of demand. And so that helps them to deal with this idea of perishability of inventory. I have another example in mind. I can't think if I'm going to bring it up later or not. But if I am, I think it comes up again in the next example. If I am running a real estate office and I have a bunch of employees working for me, they're independent realtors, right? So they have a desk in my office, they have a phone, they have a computer maybe. If there's no bookings, I'm not going to pay them just to sit there probably. So what do I do? What do I say to them? Go home. If nobody's coming into the hairstylist shop, they probably just have to go home. We begin to manage that side of things. All right. So let's think about the inventory carrying costs of various scenarios. And we would say that these things depend on the cost of the employees and the equipment. So here's my example I just used. What's the cost of carrying a real estate agent or a hairstylist? Not that expensive. There's not a lot of elaborate equipment, a lot of elaborate facilities, a lot of background stuff that they have to have. What's the cost of a dry cleaner who provides a service for you? Man, they need a shop. They need equipment. They need a lot of chemicals. That begins to mount up. What's the cost of a airline that isn't selling its seats? That's got to be astronomical, right? So we find that we have low cost to high cost inventories. Most salons have stylists on commission, so there's a low carrying cost for the salon. Salon buy products such as shampoo for wholesale and then double the cost to sell to their customers. These products represent one inventory carrying cost, but it's not mammoth, it's not huge. If you're running an auto repair center, you've got a pretty big shop with a lot of pieces, parts, lubricants, tires, batteries sitting around. That becomes a little more expensive. And then Kennywood, Cedar Park, Disney World, they've got to be pretty expensive in terms of the inventory they're carrying, whether or not there are customers there for those services. What level of service are you going to provide? Well, we talked about core products a long time ago. Here we talk about the core or primary services. These are the major activities of a business or a not-for-profit organization. So if you are an investment service, what's the core of what you do? You have to provide a brokerage account to buy and sell stocks. If you don't do that, you're not really an investment services operation, right? So at the core, we have that. But there are lots of different ways to present that to consumers. For example, does anybody know the name Charles Schwab? Do we know that? Yeah? Anybody else knows Charles Schwab? Only one person. You know it too? Do you have an image about Charles Schwab? Any idea about? They invest your money? Okay. Anybody else have any image about Charles Schwab at all? Yeah, what's your image? Yeah, true, they invest money, they do insurance, nothing else. All right, well then, my point is they are pretty sophisticated. They're going to offer you a lot of services.
And can you explain to me why you recommend synthetic over cedar?
Superfood. Is that a real thing?
It's a great school, but is it the right one for her?
Is this really any better than the one you got last year?
If we consolidate suppliers, what's the savings there?
So should we go with the 467 horsepower?
Or is a 423 enough?
Good question.
You ask a lot of good questions.
I think we should move you into our new fund.
Sure.
Okay.
But are you asking enough about how your wealth is managed? Wealth management at Charles Schwab.
So the point here is don't just, you know, go minus any of these things. Use a company like Charles Schwab that's going to give you information. Have you guys heard of E-Trade? E-Trade, same sort of image as Charles Schwab in your mind? Somewhat different, and of course their advertising, I haven't seen it recently, is a little different.
So yeah, sorry about last night.
Yeah, I just don't understand why you didn't call.
Yeah, well, I was on E-Trade, you know, diversifying my portfolio, taking control like a wolf.
Right.
What's that? That's volatility in the market. Taking care of. Wolf style. Oh, oh, oh!
And that milkaholic Lindsay wasn't over?
Lindsay?
Milka, what?
Build a diversified portfolio at E-Trade.
Do you sense at all that those have somewhat different target markets for their brokerage service at all? Okay? And so, at the core, you got to do the brokerage service, but there are different ways to present that to the consumer. Then, in addition to the core, you can differentiate with ancillary services. Charles Schwab at least promotes itself as having a lot more professional information than E-Trade does. So these are the expected or optional supplements to the primary purchase. Maybe at your local establishment you're going to have craft nights with live music. Maybe you can offer a loyalty rewards program beyond just the core. Maybe you're an airline, but you also offer up travel insurance, not expected as the core to airlines, but why not? Free appointments with your personal stylist. Wow, I can make an appointment. renter's insurance from your apartment management. I offer apartments, but I also get you insurance. Standing for something special. Obviously, Tom's provides a product, but they also offer up the idea that when you buy Tom's, you help fund access to mental health resources for the millions of people on Earth who need them, a service provided by this product company that makes them stand for something special. In B2B world, they might really focus on not just your product and its specs, but prompt delivery that sets you aside. Favorable credit terms, responsive 24/7 customer service, automatic inventory management, 401k record keeping from your outsourced payroll company. So you have to understand what it is that your consumers value. Consumers and organizational buyers, sure, they want quality products at the right price, yes, with qualified sales and service personnel, offering the maximum benefits for the minimum effort with low wait times. In other words, they demand value. And whatever you can do in your customer service areas, in your experience areas, to provide value is going to set you out aside from competition, in addition to these other things. I'm about to get into the casual dining experience. It goes on for a little bit. I got 3 minutes. Let's call it a day, and I'll see you next time. Enjoy the lovely weather.